Today's program is brought to you by the International Culinary Center, offering courses that range from classic French techniques in culinary, pastry, and bread baking to Italian studies to management, from culinary technology to food writing, from cake making to wine tasting. For more information, visit culinarycenter.com.
Hey, 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 I'm Jimmy Carboni from Beer Sessions Radio. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Episode 134 of The Morning After. I'm Jesse Kiefer.
I am Sarah Kamen.
On today's show, chef de cuisine Min Kong and executive sous chef Anthony Coffey of the new Andrew Carmelini restaurant, Little Park in Tribeca. We'll talk to them all about their new restaurant. Later in the show, we'll throw the Morning After quiz at Min and Anthony. This week's topic, the world's smallest park. It's called Mill Ends Park, and of course, it is located in Portland, Oregon.
Did you just give it away?
No, that's not a... Don't worry. That's not the answer to one of the questions.
Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert. No, I just find it... Of course, there's the smallest park in the world
exists. The most twee park, shall we say.
Okay, yeah, exists in Portland that, you know, of course they would have something that ridiculous. But first, Sarah, you have some food news for us.
I do. Some breaking food news, as always.
And Anthony and Min, please feel free to throw your opinions at us about the ridiculous food news that Sarah's about to,
it's very
to give
serious,
us.
And it's all real. Okay, first of all, this horrible news coming from Japan. According to Grub Street, they have been gripped by a crippling French fry shortage. Now, I don't know if you guys, maybe you guys knew this because you're chefs, but apparently in Japan, they consume 33 pounds of potatoes per capita annually.
No way.
Yeah, and they're also known for like these fabulous fry parties. As in, like, French fry parties. So this is really bad. There's a labor contract dispute that's been going on with the United States. And apparently Japan is digging into their fry reserves at this point. It's getting to be a very, very desperate situation. So certainly our thoughts are with them. we hope they recover from this soon.
I mean, what about daikon fries? That seems like that's what they would have to move on to, right?
I mean, that's a pretty poor substitute for French fries. Let's be real about
they
that.
They should just develop like a fry-shaped potato or a fry, like potatoes
general.
That just grow.
They have the
as
technology.
Fries.
We know they do.
Yeah. I mean, they do the square watermelons there, right?
Yeah. You're
so
right.
Can't they just grow?
A soy potato.
I think it's like, I don't know. I think they're like depending on the McDonald's ones or something. It seems weird. You would think, yeah, Japan would be able to figure out how to grow their own French fries.
Well, I mean, aren't French fries kind of a pain in the ass to prepare? Fresh French fries?
It's a process.
They're all about efficiency. They don't have like robots there.
They have things that are much more difficult to prepare than French fries, I'm sure.
Good point.
Like
good point.
Sushi.
Yeah, whatever.
Like digging uni out of like fresh from the sea spiky containers. Okay, moving on to other types of foods. Okay, so this is coming out of Florida, of course.
Is this less tragic?
Not for the alligator, which was killed. A 719-pound wild alligator was killed by some restaurant tour guy with a crossbow.
Oh, my God.
So this guy killed an alligator, like, in his backyard, apparently, or some sort of private residence, and he's serving it at his restaurants because he's the owner of Charlie's Steakhouse, and one of the menu items is the Florida Gator appetizer, which is a third of a pound of a deep-fried citrus-marinated gator. So since it is 719 pounds, someone did the math, and that's 2,000 portions of alligator.
Oh, my God.
You better freeze some of that.
Yeah. So if you're looking to try some alligator, get your butt to Florida.
It'll still be there next
year.
Yeah,
they need help eating it.
Yeah.
I can't believe he used a crossbow. It's like Game of Thrones down there in Florida. It's the fucking Wild West.
I mean, I wonder if there's any laws on, you know, legal alligator hunting. Like,
There must be.
Is this gator sustainable? Has it been like fed a diet of organic
fish? Well, it's clearly local if he got it from his backyard.
Yeah, what is a 700-pound alligator doing in a residential space?
I don't know, stupid alligator. What are you, get out. What are you doing? That's so much alligator. Or crocodile or whatever.
In the wrong place at the wrong time.
Yeah,
for alligator.
For sure. That sucks. Would you guys, I mean, you guys are food people. Would you eat that gator?
Yes.
Yeah. Does that sound good? Like deep fried citrus marinated gator?
Yeah, actually it does.
Does it? Have you had it? Have you eaten gator?
Nah.
I heard it tastes like chicken.
It's exactly like chicken. But if I knew I had a 700-pound alligator in my backyard, I'd feel a lot more comfortable knowing it was in my stomach than still in my backyard.
Knowing that you owned a crossbow. Right.
And that too, you don't
like,
get to use
a crossbow.
Crossbow?
I'm more concerned about like the laws about owning that.
I'm wondering why he's making the alligator an appetizer. If he's got 2,000 portions of it, why don't you just
make a whole tasting menu?
Make it an entree. Yeah.
I hope at least he's running a special.
900 courses.
900 course alligator for $29.99.
That would be more news. Oh yeah.
Okay. So lastly, ish. So you guys know that restaurant TGI Fridays. Super organic local. Just kidding. No, it's not. It's like a monster's chain. So first of all, there's like a lot going on about them. They apparently just closed two of their locations in New York, one being in Union Square and the other one being I forget. But
there's one in Times Square, but I don't think that one will ever close.
No, I don't think it's that one. It's a different location. But they're also doing, so they're like having some financial issues, I guess. But they're also doing this thing for the holidays where they're having flying drones go around the restaurant. So this has already been going on in the UK, versions of the TGIFs. So they have these like flying drones flying around the restaurants with a mistletoe. And if the drone stops on two people, then they are encouraged to kiss. And there's like a screen so everyone can see them. And they don't have to kiss. Because that would be sexual harassment. But if they do kiss, then they get a gift card to TGI Fridays. Isn't that crazy?
So this could be like two strangers at the bar?
I guess it could
be. And the drone lands over you?
Or, I mean,
or that time that you and your sister ended up kissing.
What did you do?
But you're like, we wanted that gift card.
Yeah,
man,
like, I don't think the point is to like promote awkwardness as much as it's like, yay, look at them kissing. But I mean, that's kind of crazy if you're like pressured to kiss somebody you don't necessarily want to kiss.
Yeah, what if you're there with your boss?
I know. And then you just, and everyone's like, kiss, kiss, kiss. And you're like disappointing everyone because you're not doing it.
I think they're like they're just looking for a sexual harassment.
I mean,
suit.
That is right. That's really totally is. Sexual harassment. Yeah.
Or there's going to be like a discrimination one. Like, what if there's like a same sex couple?
That's what
and
I
they,
was
like,
thinking
don't
too.
Don't want to go to them. And oh,
yeah.
Lord.
So that,
I'm never
yeah.
going there anyway. So
yeah, I wasn't. It's closed. I guess I can't go now. So that's like our big food news for the week. But real news. I mean, this is totally real news. But there's also been a lot going on in the news, Jesse, about your place of work, which is Terroir, and then its sister restaurant, Hearth. Wondering if you could just comment on that, because we've been hearing a lot about like a split between the owners.
Yeah, I mean, it's exactly that. Marco Canora and Paul Greco have decided to part ways. They both are parting very amicably, but feel they're at the point in their career that they want to branch off and do, you know, be a part of their own thing. So
who's going with what restaurant?
So Marco will be staying at Hearth and also keeping the East Village Terroir location and rebranding that. So that's pending. I don't even know what that's going to be. And then Paul will be taking Terroir Tribeca and Terroir Murray Hill and hopefully expanding upon those. So that's all I have to say. And I'm happy for them to start new adventures on
cool.
their own.
Well, thank you for kind of setting the record straight there. There's been a lot of rumors.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
I think it'll be great.
Okay, well, why don't we take a break and we will be back with Min and Anthony.
The International Culinary Center is a proud sponsor of the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. The ICC, with locations in New York and California, provide cutting-edge education to future chefs, restaurateurs, and wine professionals. We're proud to claim Dan Barber, Bobby Flay, and David Chang among our honored alumni. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton from Chef Story. Check out our ICC website at internationalculinarycenter.com.
Hi, how are you? My name is Andrew W.K. They say when things are very delicious, it must be Heritage Radio.
And we're back here on The Morning After with a ton of high-profile sous chefing jobs under her belt. Chef Min Kong is now grabbing the reins as chef de cuisine of the new Andrew Carmelini restaurant, Little Park, in the Smith Hotel. She's also brought along executive sous chef Anthony Coffey. Welcome to The Morning After, guys.
Thanks.
Thanks for having us.
So, Little Park is a neighbor of mine, as I'm in at the terroir in Tribeca. And the restaurant itself seems to have just, like, come out of nowhere, but like a fast turnaround. How was opening for you guys?
The opening so far has actually been pretty smooth, you know, sort of like a low profile process. And, you know, we kind of kept it like under the radar without a lot of hype or buzz. And I think that's kind of lended itself to, you know, smooth opening. We've kind of just gone from one step to the next, from, you know, accommodating the hotel to opening dinner. You know, we're doing breakfast now, next is lunch, and then after the holidays, we'll be full circle with brunch, and so far, so good.
So how did you end up coming to be chef de cuisine at Little Park? How did that come to fruition?
Well, I used to work with Andrew Carmelini back in the day. I worked with him at Avoce first and then opened La Conda with Anthony. And then I left and I did a couple other things. And then once I was sort of all set with my last position, then it just kind of everything fell into place. You know, they were looking for somebody, I was looking for something, and it just worked out.
So can you talk a little bit about the concept behind Little Park? This is... I don't know how many, I can't really keep track of how many Carmelini restaurants there are at this point in New York. I know there's several Italian ones.
Yeah. You need two hands and two toes.
Yeah, Lafayette.
2 feet to count.
The Dutch.
French, the Dutch.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay, so this is more of his like farm to table kind of seasonal cooking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Can you guys kind of elaborate on that? Because it does feel very distinctive from the rest of the ones he's put out so far.
Well, I think we've been trying to kind of avoid some of the cliches, even though farm to table is pretty accurate. I think we're just really trying to use things that are good and fresh and taste great right now, and stuff that is available locally, locally sourced fish and vegetables and things like that. You know, seasonal, I think, is used all the time, but that's pretty true for us. And vegetable forward is also pretty true, although we do, you know, like I said, have locally sourced meats and fish. I think that's what we're doing. We're just kind of like trying to use stuff that's good now and make it like approachable.
Yeah. So how much of that, like the in terms of the concept, I mean, I don't know, maybe I'm way off here, but it seems sort of almost a little strange to me that Carmelini is kind of like getting in the local like seasonal game at this point when so many other people have been doing it like very successfully for a while now. Because in a lot of ways, he's kind of like a pioneer when he ventures out. So it's like how much of that has he been working on, or how long has it been in the works? And then how much of that came from you? Like how much of the... you know, like we talked to Sal before about Bar Premi, and it was like Bar Premi had been like a concept for a really, really long time. So is Little Park something that you had been invested in, and like did a lot of the concept come from, you know, this is something that you, Min, like wanted to work on personally, or is it the concept was already in the works and it was just a matter of like the right place and the right time?
Well, I think this is something that Andrew Carmelini has always sort of valued in all of his restaurants. I mean, without it being so obviously known in all the other restaurants, he has been involved with the market and has, you know, tried to incorporate locally sourced ingredients in all of the restaurants, actually. Many of the restaurants currently, including Lafayette, La Conda, the Dutch, they all use like farm cooperatives and certainly the market. And I think it's not actually a new concept for this restaurant.
You say it's like a trending thing, but he and I think a lot of other chefs have sort of always been doing this. It's just never been highlighted. And now it's nice to be able to highlight, to have a restaurant where you can highlight those things that we do at Little Park, with, especially with New York ingredients, and being able to do that now.
Yeah. So, Anthony, why do you think, what sort of differentiates Little Park from, like, I don't know, ABC Kitchen or like those other places that are kind of like known for being veggie forward and that kind of thing? I mean, from an inside perspective, like, what makes it feel different?
I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, especially with Andrew Carmelini, he has so many relationships with a lot of farmers, especially from the green market, that he's used in the past, and now we're able to use them sort of exclusively for their particular ingredients, whether it's beans, whether it's meat, whether it's fish. You know, I think it's just a way for him to have those particular people focused on and highlighted
it
now.
Yeah, really shine. Yeah. Min, I want to know, you know, regarding the menu here, is this your food? Is this the style of food that you want to be cooking? I guess, why you out of other chefs that he's worked with and then within his restaurants?
I don't think that it's something that's specific to me. I mean, this is the menu, and the food is really a collaborative between Anthony and myself, and even AC. Like, a lot of the menu items are products of his dreams and his crazy ideas that we just kind of like see to fruition. But as far as it being specific to me, I don't think it's specific to me. I think, you know, initially with this project, they were looking for somebody who was interested in, you know, the farm to table concept. And I would say that I always have been, and I've always loved, you know, having relationships with farmers and vegetable centric food. That's something I've always been interested in. But I really do feel that this isn't just me. This is definitely a collaborative effort.
How do you guys go about planning menus? You sit at the table, have a bunch of beers, and talk about ingredients?
Yeah, actually, or what?
Yes, that's exactly how it happens.
That was the first movie session right there, including pizza.
Probably a lot of croissants.
No, you know, honestly, it's a very organic process, just like, and I hope that kind of comes through with the food. You know, we just kind of start talking, or maybe there's the seed of an idea and we start talking about it. And then the more we talk about it, the more we start to execute it. When we start getting ingredients in and we take a look at it and we try it in different forms, it kind of unfolds to us. And like I said, it's very organic. It kind of just presents itself to us, and we just guide it along, and then one day it's on a plate and we're like, this is great.
Most of Carmelini's restaurants have a specific like focus of cuisine, so Italian or French. With this one, it seems like you guys can do anything. Has that been a challenge, or has it actually been easier?
I don't think it's challenging in any kind of limiting way. I think it's been kind of easy because we can kind of take bits and pieces from here and there. Although, you know, we try to stay locally sourced, which in that sense can be a little bit limiting. But, you know, instead of maybe using a specific Italian olive oil or something, we try to get something from California, or you know, vinegars that are from, you know, a domestic vinegar as opposed to imported. But outside of that, I think without having any titles on things or any like type of cuisine placed upon us, I think it's been kind of liberating. You know, I mean, my experience before this was Italian, and then before that it was I was at the Nomad, and then before that was La Conda. And so every time there was always a definite sort of idea and perspective each time. But this has been, I think, pretty open and natural and organic. And for that reason, it's been a natural thing. It's been good.
Yeah. You, Anthony? Sorry.
Yeah, it's been very freeing to be able to do that because, you know, with my experience as well, I've done a lot of specific Italian restaurants.
Were you at La Conda all the way till now, Anthony, or are you kind of bopping around too?
No, I moved around a little bit. I went from La Conda to the Dutch, and then to Teresi Italian Specialties, and then to Little Park. And, you know, all those restaurants are very specific to a certain type of cuisine, and this has been great. Like, I love it. It's what I've sort of always wanted to do with food, is be able to take from any region, anywhere, and use our local ingredients and put it together on the plate. It's just been, yes, it's challenging because the box is so open that it's hard to narrow things down, but it's also a lot of fun in the same way.
I mean, I also would imagine, you know, with a restaurant that's just off the ground, you know, you guys have a lot of room to eventually kind of maybe streamline exactly. Like, this is definitely a Little Park dish versus, like, something maybe you're trying now that you're like, yeah, I don't know if this fits.
Right. It'll make, eventually Little Park, it'll have a Little Park style. Like, oh, this is definitely a Little Park dish. Still in the works, though. Developing yeah. Knows what that is exactly, but...
Yeah, at this point, we have so many dreams that, you know, an idea will strike us and then we'll, you know, follow the course. And sometimes it turns into a dish and sometimes it doesn't. But I think right now we're just so excited to be open and to be new and to just be developing that, you know, things are popping up here and there. But I think down the road, we definitely will have a very consolidated voice and perspective and idea. And it will be sort of a comprehensive package. But we're on their way.
So it says autumn on your website right mm-hmm. now. So does that mean you're going to change the whole menu as the season changes? Because it's kind of changing right now.
Yeah.
And you guys just opened like a
right.
few weeks ago.
Right. Yeah, seasons.
Don't make them
things.
Regret being here, Sari. Don't tell them they have even more work
by
to
the
do.
Time this airs, it is winter.
Yeah. Right. No pressure or anything. Yes, it does say autumn because there are a lot of autumnal ingredients on that menu. I think that's the beauty of the menu, is that very easily we could swap one thing out for something else. And it has the flexibility to change like smoothly. So, you know, into winter, I think you will see certain changes, although we won't overhaul the entire menu because we want it to be sort of like smooth, and we don't want to have such a stark contrast from like the last day of fall yeah. to the first day
so
of winter.
So you're not
going to
do the thing where you like completely redesign the entire
dining room? No. No. No, we're not going to do that, but I think we are.
Get some scented candles like peppermint.
We are going to pay respect to just what's good, you know, and so during autumn, you see a lot of squashes and root vegetables and things like that. And then in 2015, in January and February, you'll see other things.
Yeah.
But global warming, I think, has been very good to us this year.
Oh,
autumn has been extended into December. You know,
global warming doesn't
still
exist.
Tomatoes at the market. There's still
we're happy you know, for you, but not the rest of the world. So, right. Ben, I do have to ask. You have been in like some serious heavy-hitting kitchens in the past couple of years. So how does it feel now to be like not only in charge, but, you know, also being a lady after being with like such just kind of like powerful personalities and well-known chefs? Mm.
I knew the woman question was going to come.
I didn't.
No, I knew it would.
You know, we're ladies. We want to know.
The first thing I will say is... As far as an opening goes, I think this has been pretty smooth. You know, I think every opening is going to be different because there are always different circumstances, whether it's the, you know, the design of the kitchen or the construction of the building or the cuisine or the crazy chef who is like yelling out orders or whatever the case is. Every single opening is different. And this one, like I said before, has been very smooth, and I'm so thankful for that. And I think like the team and all the brains that went into the concept and the execution, but this so far, crossing my fingers, so far so good. As far as being a woman, you know, I've always tried not to think about the gender topic so much, although, you know, for better or for worse, in the kitchen it is a real issue, you know, just even down to the physicality of things, because as you can imagine, you know, men are always so much more capable of, like, lifting or reaching or carrying or whatever than a woman is. And there's always that kind of balance to, you know, as far as like it being an issue and treating it an issue and then not. But You know, I'm really proud of this. I'm proud of being part of it, and not just for myself, but because, yes, I am a woman chef, and there are still people that want to be part of this, despite the fact that I am a woman, which I didn't think, which I wasn't sure about, honestly. You know,
when you did think about it, though,
I did. Mm-hmm. You know, when people were coming to apply and starting to work for this company, I was a little bit worried at first when they met me and saw that I was a woman, whether or not that would be a factor in their decision to work at this restaurant. So, you know, so far it hasn't been an issue, and I'm very thankful for that. And as you know, I try not to make it an issue, but I do feel proud of what we're doing and what we've accomplished so far.
Great. I want to know, this is something I like to ask chefs, you know, how do you, it's such a intense job to have. How do you calm down? How do you relax? How do you keep sane? Because your energy feels great today. I wouldn't know you just opened a restaurant.
Well, I will also say that, you know, you both of you, Anthony and Min, were at La Conda Verde when I was a server there. And, like, I mean, you guys are always super chill in the kitchen, but not everybody was, but you guys were, and so was Sal.
Yeah, well, we're doing what we love. Yeah. You know, that's how I kind of get my, like, anguish out. any stress is where, you know, developing a new dish, of course, there's always going to be stress no matter what you do, but, you know, as long as you're doing what you love, it's just, it helps you release that into what you're doing, so... at work, at least, that's what helps.
Yeah, I mean, I will say one thing. You know, in other openings where people are kind of thrown together and you're put in these situations of extreme duress and high stress and expectation, I think when it comes down to it, your team and the people really matter. And I think in this situation, I just have to say I'm so thankful that Anthony's part of this and that the people that are part of it have come together as a team because, you know, when shit hits a fan, it's really the people to your right and left that make a huge difference. And this team has been amazing. You know, everybody's strengths and weaknesses really complement each other. And so I think that, yeah, we are kind of like calm today and we do feel good because I think... Like I said, crossing my fingers, it's been smooth because, like, this team has really gelled very well, and I'm really thankful.
Yeah, this is definitely the best opening I've ever been a part of.
And that's saying a lot because openings can be insane.
Oh, yeah.
They can be awful and excruciatingly painful. It's true.
Well, you guys have worked together a lot before, too.
That's true. That helps. Yeah, we go way back.
I will say, I mean, from an outside perspective, Carmelini does do a nice job of, like, keeping his people together.
You know, it's funny how many people do, like, the boomerang with this company. You know, some people, they'll, like, start at a certain time and then they'll leave and then you'll see them pop up again later. No matter what the progression was, like, from here to there or whatever. They come back. I mean,
What is it about Carmelini that makes everybody come back?
You know what? I think they just have kind of whole picture perspective, I think, which is cool. I think, you know, they're on the cusp of being like a bigger company, but they still have that sort of like precise and meticulous eye for the smaller things that matter, that like the corporate sort of entities kind of lose at this point. So I think, you know, everybody can feel part of like something cool and something that's still new and something that like they can grow and really feels kind of familial, despite the fact that it's big. You know, there are these
the
restaurants.
He keeps banging out restaurants, and it sort of
he
seems
keeps
like
banging them
if
out.
If you stick around long enough, you might just get to helm your own.
No, it's true. I mean, it's growing. There's a lot. You know, the next thing you know, you turn around and there's a new one, or there's, and that's true for New York City. It's just like it's just faster and faster development, and that's true for this company, but. I think they make a lot of good decisions, and I think they strike while the iron's hot.
Right.
And
yeah,
they like it's not arbitrary. They don't just, you know, do whatever, like some opportunity comes along and they're just like, yeah, cool, great. I think it's all very thoughtful and well executed, and they always have a vision for it. So
why is he the, Jesse and I were talking about this, why is he like the one chef who can do any kind of food and no one attacks him for it? For not being like, oh, he's not French. Oh, he's not from California. It's like, you know, when April Bloomfield did tacos, people were like, what? She's not Mexican. But it's like Carmelini, no one ever says that about him. But he can still kind of like vacillate between genres, and it's still always like a hit. Why do you, is there, I don't know, something in that?
Well, I think he's laid a pretty good foundation for himself. You know, I mean, he has such an extensive fine dining background that I think at this point, sometimes people don't really talk about it anymore because it is kind of back in the day, but L'Espinasse and Le Cirque and Danielle, like, his background, I think, is very extensive and it's very reputable. So to a certain extent, I mean, you know, I am a little bit biased because I'm part of the company, but I kind of feel like he can do anything because he wouldn't do anything that he doesn't feel completely confident in and something he doesn't really fully believe in. So, you know, maybe I think, you know, Andrew Carmelini does, like, I don't know, Thai street food or whatever. Like, he wouldn't do it until he really felt like he could do it well and do it the right way and legitimately. So,
so no Korean barbecue tacos next week?
Not next week. Stay tuned.
Yeah. Okay. But if he did it, it would be nice.
Oh, okay.
It would sure. be good.
Well, we're certainly yeah. lacking. Do you guys have like a particular dish? I'd love to hear from both of you about something that you're really excited on. It's just such a beautiful menu. I'd love to hear what standards are from both of you.
I think you should talk about the duck.
Ah, yes, the duck. We have a walk-in full of ducks.
It sounds like the beginning of a joke.
Yeah.
A duck so walked there was into a duck,
and he decided to stay for at least 2 weeks.
We reserved half the half the restaurant for walk-in ducks.
Exactly. Yeah. One of my favorite dishes that I was able to work on when we first opened was it was our dry-aged duck with, at that time it was autumn, so there are lots of Concord grapes available. And it was just like the perfect pairing. So, yeah, we have a 2 week at least aged Long Island duck with pickled Concord grapes that we scavenged from the market from first time we saw them until they weren't available anymore. And we got as many as possible. We have like 20 gallons of them now, which
so
is great.
So that's where they went.
Yeah, exactly. We have them. And we serve it with you know, very simple garnish, just red quinoa that we cook in a little bit of duck fat and finish with red wine vinegar and some of the confit duck hearts and gizzards and sort of a mashed turnip that's finished with creme fraiche and chives and a duck sausage that we make from the legs and foie gras. But it's very simple but very satisfying.
Is it vegan?
It is. It's vegetarian, vegan.
Sorry.
Exactly.
Foie gras means vegan in French. Yes.
I never knew that. Finally, thank you. Thank you.
Tofu foie gras.
Yeah, that's definitely one of my favorites. Another one that's very seasonal and very local is the pecanic bay scallops. They're served raw in the shell. We get them in the shell from Long Island. And just serve it with a Gold Rush apple, fresh apple juice, a little bit of grated radish. And it's just simple and beautiful and bright and perfect. It's a perfect dish. And that's part of what I love about this restaurant is very, you know, we just try to showcase the ingredient and make it what it is, and it does. It's not very hard when you have such great things around us.
Totally. Yeah. Min, do you have a dish that you be loving?
I happen to like our risotto. It's a beet risotto, and it's finished with beet juice, so it's like this really beautiful garnet color, which I think is very unique, and... And it's also very, like, hearty and satisfying. And despite that, it's like a vegetable-based dish and has, you know, locally sourced. I could say that about everything. I'd say it all day. But cheese and poppy seeds and grated beet inside. And I like that dish particularly because I just think it's so beautiful. And it's, like, beautiful when you receive it and then... Hopefully, it's also beautiful when you eat it. I think so, but...
It sounds delicious.
Yes.
So Little Park is on the corner of Chamber Street, right?
Yeah.
And...
West Broadway.
West Broadway in the Smith Hotel.
Mm-hmm.
So people should check it out.
Please do.
Is there like, an Instagram or... I imagine website is littlepark.com.
Yeah,
or
Little
unless
Park.
The Little Park I'm about to quiz you on is.
I'll tell you what. The domain littlepark.com is not taken, so we're all over it. Littlepark.com.
Well done.
And our Instagram is littleparknyc.
All right, we're going to take a break here on The Morning After. We're going to come back with The Morning After quiz.
This is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, and you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
And we're back here on The Morning After in studio today, chef de cuisine of Little Park, Min Kong, and executive sous chef, Anthony Coffey. You guys, it's time for The Morning After quiz. Are you ready?
Yes.
All right. Min and Anthony, we know you know all about Little Park, the restaurant at the Smith Hotel, but what do you know about the world's smallest park, Mill Ends Park in Portland, Oregon? Prepare for the Morning After quiz. Okay, so three questions, all multiple choice. No one has ever gotten them all right, just so you know.
You got to beat two out of three.
Until today.
Prove
is this
me wrong.
Collaborative or is this individual?
Yeah, why don't you both take it?
I think we should. Yeah. We're going to do it together. Well,
maybe one of you can be the winner. The first ever.
You'll have to fight over that.
All right. Question one. Mill Ends Park, established in 1948, is literally a small circle, a total of 452 square inches, which is about 2 feet across. What was its original purpose? Was it A, a manhole cover? Was it B, a hole for a light pole? Or was it C, an empty grave?
I don't know. 2 feet sounds too big for a manhole.
A manhole? I don't know.
And 2 feet sounds too big for a light hole.
Is the park in a city area or
no
more
questions.
Of a rural area?
Well, this is 1948, so I can imagine that the street of Portland wasn't the same as it is today. Right now, it is in the median of a road.
Hmm. What's it called? Mill's End?
Mill Ends.
Mill Ends. That sounds morbid. That could be a grave, no? 2 feet, that's so small.
All right, guys. Come on. Final answers. Anthony.
You have it.
All right.
They're trying to whisper to each other, but the hard thing to do that on radio is but, you have headphones on.
Yeah, okay. We can hear you.
A?
Yeah, okay. You're collectively going to go with A?
Wait, no. Yes.
Collectively going with A, which is manhole cover. You're both
yes.
wrong.
Oh, oh,
fuck,
I told you.
it's actually a hole for a light pole, and the guy who
he fucked it up because it was 2 feet wide, right?
2 feet across. It's We say the F word all the time. Don't worry about
great.
It.
Okay, great. So he fucked it up, obviously, became a park.
He was looking from... He was a columnist for the Oregon Journal, and he's, like, looking down upon this hole in the ground, and it was a hole for a light pole, and he decided to just plant some flowers in it, which is kind of how the whole thing started. So we'll get a little bit more backstory now with the second question. All right. Number two. Dick Fagan, a columnist for the Oregon Journal, like I just said, established Mill Ends. What was his story of the origin of the park? So this guy is a columnist. He's kind of a fictional writer. So he created a story as to how it came to fruition. It wasn't about, you know, just him planting flowers in a hole. All right?
Okay.
So A, was it the home to the only leprechaun colony west of Ireland? Turning the page. Was the origin story B, that it was a portal to China? Or was it C, it was a swimming pool for butterflies?
Oh my God.
So we've got A, leprechaun colony, B, portal to China, C, swimming pool for butterflies.
You think it's the butterflies?
I feel like it's the butterflies.
I kind of think it's the leprechauns. Mm.
You don't have to.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
You can split up on your answers.
No, we're not splitting. We don't do that.
They're okay. A team.
You want to do butterflies? I'll do butterflies.
I'm going with you on this one. You know,
leprechauns.
Yeah, I fucked up the last one. I'll take credit for that. You can fuck up this one.
Okay, fine. A, final answer.
A, final answer. You are correct.
Yes!
Knew it.
Yes! Can I get a bell or some sort of like... Ding, 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 ding. Oh, there it is. Great, thank you.
There's the bell, yeah.
Delayed.
We'll work on that. We'll work on that.
What? That was a real bell.
Or maybe people don't get answers right often enough that you don't have a bell.
We're working on it.
So Dick Fagan, yeah, he literally said that he ran into a leprechaun at the hole, and the leprechaun gave him a wish, because when you meet a leprechaun, I guess... you get a wish, and his wish was to have a park of his own, and unfortunately he didn't specify the size of the park, so the leprechaun gave him the smallest
part.
And he actually incorporated the story of the leprechaun, whose name was Patrick O'Toole. He gave him a name and all
that
stuff.
Oh, I know him.
You're old friends. All right, well done, and I love your teamwork. No one's ever decided to be a team, actually. When we've had two people taking the quiz.
You see, it means something.
It's friendship.
All right, last question. Recently, Mill Ends Park has caused some controversy between England and the U.S. For what reason? Is it A, they claim the use of the term leprechaun is highly offensive? Is it B, they don't think Mill Ends can be technically called a park because it's 2 feet wide? Or is it C, there is a Mill Ends Park in London that was established before 1948, and they want Portland to change the name?
B or C?
Thinking.
I favor C.
I do too. It seems like they would be pissed off about that. Some little park was getting their name of some probably...
Yeah, and Mill Ends sounds too antiquated to be, like, just ours.
Yeah.
I think we should go with C.
I agree.
C is incorrect.
No way.
Actually, it's they don't think Mill Ends can be technically called a park. They claim that they have the smallest park in the world, which is 15 feet wide, and they don't think that Mill Ends can be technically called a park because it's kind of like, basically they're like,
it's bush.
They're like, my window box could be called a park if this planter can be called a park.
But I want to add, and this is an important detail, they're in the Guinness Book of World Records as being the smallest park.
Mill Ends
is.
Well, there it is.
That's, boom.
It's official.
Guinness says so.
So England can go do that thing.
Untwist their little do panties. That.
Yeah.
Knickers.
You can go cry in their park. Their little park.
Go cry in their pints.
Yeah. Well, thank you two for being such good sports. On our little park quiz.
Thank you. That was very informative.
And by sports, yes, we mean soccer, not football. I could do this all day.
Oh, I love it. Well, I encourage everybody to go visit Min and Anthony at Little Park. And good luck to you guys. I'm excited to see how it goes.
Thank Great. You. Thanks
Thank
so
you
much.
Very much.
This is The Morning After on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.